Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Welcome back to Friends from Work. This is a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Multiverse, hosted by me, Kyle Schoenewill, and my longtime friend from work, Robbie Earle. Robbie, I slept terribly last night, and so I'm exhausted this morning. Comedian Nate Bargatze has this funny bit.
Oh, I think I know what you're talking about.
How he'll blame everything possible for his bad sleep other than the horrific dietary choices he made. And that's me. Like, I woke up, I'm like, man, is the hotel like not cold enough? My pillow stinks. And it's like, no, really, it's probably the gallon of ice cream I ate last night at 8 p.m., you know?
I that's funny because I also ate ice cream last night. They were running a sale at Target on Ben & Jerry's.
And attaboy.
The pistachio from Ben & Jerry's is like the thing is, I know that's not like a headline flavor. No. I also got some other good flavors. They have like a strawberry cheesecake that's great. Obviously all the cookie dough options are like valid choices, mm-hmm. but pistachio, don't sleep on it.
And because Candace is out of town, you can just live that bachelor life. Get ice cream from Target. Do whatever you want.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I'm the cat's away. The mice will buy ice cream in quantities that are not
healthy.
Responsible.
Well, that's me.
I thought you were going to refer to. I thought you were going to refer to another Nate Bargatze line where he talks about how he's not an early riser and because of his schedule touring, which I can relate to. And I'm sure you can relate to, although I know you've become more of an early riser as a parent.
Kids will do that.
He talks about how when you wake up late, you wake up and things are just happening to you. like when you wake up early, you have this like moment to kind of sit and prepare for the day that's coming. And if you just wake up at like, even after 9, everything's just going on around you. And I related that a lot. And I thought that might be what you were saying because you didn't get good sleep last night.
That's a good one too. The one I'm specifically referring to is he talks about how much he loves pancakes, like giant stacks of pancakes with syrup. And then in the afternoon, he feels tired and he always talks to his wife and is like, man, we got to get a new pillow or something. Like, I don't know what it is. Like, oh, maybe it's the 5 stacks of pancakes you ate an hour ago. The other funny thing about doing this is when we do our main feed stuff, we're on video. But these bonus episodes are not video, so the difference is stark. Instead of me sitting like prompt and looking at the camera, I got my legs up. I'm still in my underwear. Just like legs up, leaning back kind of thing. So here we go, Logan.
Nice.
That's an image everyone was wanting today, this morning, for sure.
Filter
is off. We've been watching too much Deadpool and Logan.
I like these, though, because we were talking on our last episode, I guess on our Deadpool 2 episode, about the how long we've been doing the podcast and kind of looking back and reflecting. And I think that doing it without video still feels the most like those initial episodes, especially because I'm always like staring off in a corner somewhere thinking about something to do with Chris Evans' facial expressions. And so it's that way I don't have to pretend I'm not doing that for our video audience.
You just said Chris Evans, and that reminded me of a Instagram reel that brought me joy yesterday. There's this language I've never even heard of called Lakota language. And the Avengers cast from the original Avengers 2012 reunited to dub the Avengers in that Lakotian or whatever language. And it brought me so much joy. Like all of them, Robert Downey Jr., Chris Evans, and Mark Ruffalo. Yeah. So they are the voices of that language, and they had to learn this new language, and they did that just for the movie. And so there's this Instagram reel of people from whatever country that is sharing how grateful they are and how cool it was for them to work with them for that movie dub, which is kind of, it brought me joy.
That's wild.
It's one of those things that will warm your heart.
They must not have done that for like every dub, right?
No.
Like for French and German. And
no, because I think it was
just
like
a unique thing.
Super rare. Yeah, exactly. It's a unique thing. But brings you a little joy today. And that joy is sorely needed after watching Logan last night, because I forgot how depressing this movie is. I genuinely want to hear your thoughts for real before I get into any kind of details. And I'm saying that because you and I have been in lockstep about so many things on this journey, but truly I would love for you to raise some other points or disagree with me on some things on this one, because here's why I say this. I'll kick us off by saying I watched Logan from 2017, and this is probably my third or fourth time seeing it. And it's one of those films where I'm able to watch it and step back and objectively say, this is one of the best superhero movies ever made. It's one of the best X-Men journey movies. In fact, I think if I was just analyzing it with no preference in play from a critical perspective, driven mostly by the acting performances of the leads, which are superb.
Yeah.
It's probably the number one movie on our rewatch. I would probably go Logan 1, Days of Future Past, and then the list I was saying. It's tighter than Days of Future Past for sure. Here's what I can't kick though. Because of its disconnected feeling nature, and because it is so depressing, like I can get down with a dark movie, but because it just leaves me feeling hopeless, and I'll get into why, I just don't know that I really prefer this movie. Like that's what I have a hard time with. Like it would not be my number one at all regarding rewatchability or just, like I think I have to factor that in. So I don't think I'm going to rank it number one. I think I'm going to drop it a few spots. It's not going to plummet. But when I factor in the fact that it's not totally for me due to the lack of hope and like the bitterness, I think for me, it's like 3 or 4.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious before I give my thoughts, how does that compare for you to something like The Dark Knight?
Yeah, why? Let me think about that for a second. Why does The Dark Knight feel more hopeful to me? Let me think about that. I think, again, not a critical perspective. From a critical perspective, this is the best movie they've made. Preference-wise, I think it's hard for me to see Logan so jaded. And I remembered that Logan turns it around and dies sacrificing for this girl, which is true. But what I forgot is, I mean, he's literally jaded and undecided about sacrificing for her until, I'm not making this up, like 7 minutes left in the movie. I mean, it's not like he kind of has a change of heart with 30 minutes left and then you see a bunch of Logan doing the right thing. I mean, they leave him, the kids do, while he's still healing in that little lookout tower with not that much time left. And he's still kind of bitter about it until he sees the drones flying in. And so I think it's hard for me to see him just for the whole movie be so bitter, so jaded, not take a lot of what Charles says to heart, to then have Charles get murdered, to have the family get murdered, to have Logan then die, to have his albino friend die. I don't leave feeling super hopeful about it. And you technically don't even get confirmation that Eden does exist or that they can cross the border or that they did cross the border. Like, it's a genius movie, but I don't know that it gives me enough good feeling to feel like I need to watch it a lot.
Yeah.
And I don't know why The Dark Knight's different. I'll keep thinking.
Yeah, and which is not like a trick question. I'm just curious because that is, like, I mean, you know, you did point out a difference. I would say, like, the bitterness element, like, that is a lot more, not that we need to walk through the entire Dark Knight trilogy in this Logan episode, but that's something that you don't get there. You get that much more in the third entry. So you kind of have a whole movie of waiting for Bruce to kind of wake up and be himself again. But
yeah, maybe here, that's it.
Yeah, so I think the reason that does not bother me as much is because I think I read it as a put-on bitterness. Like, it's not that he actually doesn't care about Charles or Laura. It's that he is this person that's had, you know, you poor man. He's, like, had all of these things taken from him. Has just had this horrific life where everything that he's ever, like, anyone he's gotten close to, anything he's ever felt comfortable kind of resting on and believing in has ultimately been stripped away. And so I think, I mean, the fact that he is sticking with Charles in this way where it's like Charles even being alive is a dangerous thing for everybody, including Charles. And Logan's trying to find the best way to take care of him, even though he, you know, apparently accidentally killed the remaining X-Men. I feel like he still loves him, and I think he loves Laura. But I think he's afraid that if he attaches himself to her, that the same thing is going to happen to her that happened to that family that takes them in for dinner.
Can I just say,
like, such a sweet thing, and then it's totally what Logan's afraid will happen happens.
Can I just say that I agree with that? That's why I'm saying it's a weird episode. There are sweet moments between him and Laura and him and Charles, and the way he is protecting Laura, and there are a couple sweet shots of Laura seeing Logan carrying Charles to bed, and like he is still caretaking for him. I totally agree. It doesn't change my overall feeling when the movie ends, though. Like, I understand why he's bitter. It makes sense. It's not fake bitterness, and that's moving. But I don't know.
Well, I just mean I think to me it's important to even just perspective wise as I'm watching it. I think that I would feel like this movie's a lot bleaker still if I felt like this was a Logan that was morally on the fence, but I just don't, that's not the way I feel. I feel more like it's a version of him that's just kind of, he's like trying to keep everybody at a distance for their own safety. It feels like on this watch, like a really nice full circle moment as we're finishing this whole journey through. And that's what I was hoping. Because I remember as we were talking about the first X-Men movie, kind of noticing some parallels early on that I never really thought about with the first film. And I was, again, I have not seen this since like at least 2019. I remember that it was one of the movies that we put up as an option during our summer series a couple years ago. And we put it up for a vote and people voted Days of Future Past over Logan. And I don't think I ever went back and watched it after we, you know, watched Days of Future Past instead. So it's been forever. I just remembered like the high points, but I didn't remember the like nitty gritty. But there are several references back to events of the original trilogy. And so I kind of wanted to start, because we've talked about the critical piece a little bit, but I wanted to talk about kind of the timeline of it all. If that's something that you're interested in doing.
I do want to talk about that. Those are literally my two main thoughts. I mean, there are a ton of little details, but that's it. Like, I don't feel a lot of hope after the end of the movie. And I do need to talk about some of the timeline stuff, both on the references, but also the concerns. I am curious, right before you dive into that, like, I guess on my overall premise, how did it hit you? I mean, did you watch it and think this is the best movie they've made and, like, you're into it? This is one you'd rewatch? Like, what's your overall feeling right now before we start?
Yeah. I loved it this time around. It actually exceeded expectations for me, which was really saying a lot, because I came in remembering the movie well, but I even think when it first came out, I, for some of the same reasons that I never even watched other X-Men movies, like I went and saw Logan because I was really invested in the character, and I just independently kind of love Hugh Jackman as a person and actor. And I remember coming out and thinking, man, that was so, so well done. But like, I didn't necessarily think that it was, you know, on the Hollywood superhero Mount Rushmore. And now going back and watching it, like with that in my mind of like, people think this is an all-timer, I remember really liking it, but I don't know if it is going to be as good as other people think it is. And also for me, there's always the preference thing of just, I like it when you get to see these heroes in, you know, peak form. And so even though you get some of the most emotional moments out of movies like this, there's the part of me that just wants a fun X-Men movie. So all of that said, going into it, it kind of had some work to do. And man, I was just struck the whole way through by like how good of a job James Mangold did. Like, this is, again, the thing is, I don't really disagree with anything you're saying, so this is not fighting back against that, although I'm curious to get into like specific moments later. But,
well, you're allowed to fight back, but keep
going. No, I know, but I'm really like, I think you're right, but I was really kind of blown away. It is like his masterpiece as a director. And what I mean by that is, I've recently, you know, we watched The Wolverine, which is James Mangold, and that is night and day. I mean, there are hints of what he's doing here, but like, there are performances in that movie that are bad. And
he loves the idea of shooting those spears and arrows through them and dragging, back. No, for sure. I had the same feeling. The acting and the directing, because I don't think it's just Mangold's magnus opus, which it probably is. I don't know the rest of his career a ton, but.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's like,
Indiana Jones.
Yeah, it's better than Indiana Jones. I've seen Walk the Line, which is good, but this is, yeah, like, this is, he's one of these directors that I still think when I see him attached to a project, this is probably going to be pretty good. Like, I don't think that he makes bad movies, but I think this is, like, in my mind, I've kind of set this up as, like, emblematic of his career. And I think that this is very much, like, a high point that's kind of separate from the rest of his catalog that I've seen.
Real quick side note, that's fascinating to hear, too, because I think Walk the Line has some similar elements to what I was just talking about here with, like, remember in that movie, all the drug use and like he really leans into the depression part of it. And then that's kind of what this is here. But what's so fascinating about that is Indiana Jones is not that, you know, like that is totally different vibe. So it's not his only thing. No, the directing is magnificent. And you have to say the three leads, like Patrick Stewart is unbelievable here. Hugh Jackman's unbelievable. And I think the girl does an unbelievable job.
Like, yeah.
So much of the movie, in my opinion, is driven by those people.
And the director, for sure.
Those four.
Yeah. But no, you're totally right. I'm looking up her name, the actor that plays Laura. But Yeah, she's so good. And which I always feel like we have to say because Daphne right. Keene, that's right. Because people think we have it out for child actors. But like,
right.
Yeah, man, I like that first scene where she's eating the cereal and they're coming in. Like, again, I haven't seen this in a bit. So I'm thinking like, is she about to be caught unawares? Is she like, does she have some kind of plan? Like, but you don't really know what's like what her state is mentally or emotionally at this point in the movie. She doesn't talk. Mm-hmm. And then for her to just walk out with the dude's head is like, so it's such an incredible kind of character introduction.
Yeah. My exact note Logan's is the girl who daughter. Plays Laura rules and Laura is a badass.
Yeah. Even like seeing her jump on the car and like shimmy down through the sunroof. But yeah, you're right. Like she's
like
so great.
The gas station scene where she's riding the horse is so good to me.
Dude.
Like it's such a like that's a Mangold thing too to me. Like the juxtaposition of she has the same anger as Logan, but she's so early in her journey that she doesn't have any of the bitterness. So she still is taking time to enjoy things that she's never gotten to do, like ride a penny horse. Uh-huh. Or eat Pringles.
Right.
I think it's beautifully done.
No, it that and, yeah, I mean, you're right. The Patrick Stewart performance is next level. Like, Patrick Stewart is Patrick Stewart. He's obviously this legend of an actor, of a stage actor. But here, it's like the fact that he's getting to... Like it's a heartbreaking performance. Like he's delving into this character that he's been playing at this point, you know, when this movie's released for 17 years, and now
what would
longer,
happen
given like
if the most powerful brain got a brain disease, basically.
Yeah, it's and you know like what I love is I feel like there are writers that would make this more. Not mean-spirited, but more callous. Like, I think about certain comics writers who were kind of... Like, even the Old Man Logan comic, which is written by Mark Miller, that this is based on, to some extent, is a very, like... Mark Miller, he's not a writer that I super enjoy, although he's been massively influential within Marvel, but he is one of these writers that likes being, like, overly shocking and violent, and, like, the original comic... You know, it has like all of these like incestuous descendants of the Hulk that are living in this apocalyptic wasteland. And
okay.
It's all just, it's all like very, it's like, if you think this is bleak,
hey,
that's bleak.
Hey,
you know, like to the
who
next
level. Who
doesn't
have incestuous descendants of their family line, you know, which one of us can throw that stone?
That's true. Who among us? But yeah, I really love that.
Yeah, you need the juxtaposition.
He lets those moments be really soft. And like the Xavier inclusion here is the linchpin of the movie, I think. Because if it were just Logan and Laura, I don't think you would have the opportunity to see that tenderness in Logan. But also like it reframes Laura instead of this just being like a father-daughter thing, which is moving in its own way. It's also this like really beautiful opportunity for Charles to be a teacher one more time before he's gone. Like it's like this thing that he's lost that means so much to him, finding and comforting and raising new mutants.
Oh,
like
for
he
sure.
gets to be the one to help carry this, like this last generation, but maybe the next generation. Like it's a very like, the role he plays in this entire like this story and that dynamic, I think, is what would separate this from being a good movie to like a truly great movie, in my opinion.
Right. And the thing is, if they had gone the route of he's old and dying, but he's also now bitter and jaded like Logan because his school fell apart and because he did some bad things, then I think you don't get those beautiful moments because like it's Charles's hope that is infectious and bounces off what Logan's doing so well. It's that to his dying breath, he's still confessing to Logan or the other Logan, X-24, that this is, like, he doesn't deserve this, but it was the most perfect night in a while. And he's the one that does want to stay with the family.
Yeah.
And just, like, to get those beautiful moments of, like, Charles to his deathbed still has hope in humanity and that humanity and mutants can survive despite the, like, everything pointing to the opposite outcome. He's still taking that to his grave. And I think that's a beautiful part of the movie. And you need that because of the way Logan is.
Yeah. Well, and it is, you're right. Like, that's the, that optimism. We've walked through this whole journey and we've said these movies really do end up revolving around Charles, Eric, and Logan. Obviously, we don't have Eric here, but I do like being able to trace Charles, not just through the original trilogy, but through the First Class and Days of Future Past stuff, and then also the kind of new timeline films. Like, they've always struggled to figure out, not to figure out necessarily, but to accurately reflect, I think, the version of Charles that they started with, I guess, in that original film, but also, like, kind of what is it that separates him from Magneto and from the other X-Men? And sometimes you get a version of him that's kind of a jerk for no reason. Like, not Days of Future Past, because there's a reason there. But, like, sometimes they paint Xavier into the version of the character that does have some like, roots in the comics. But the version of the character that's very, like, I know the best thing. You know, I am the head of the X-Men, and I'm going to make these calls. And that never feels like the version of Xavier that Patrick Stewart first introduced to us.
Mm.
But this is that. Like, I love that. Like, that's what I think originally made that Stewart-McKellen dynamic so great, is they're not that far apart, but the difference is Xavier is always going to wind up believing that people can do the right thing and that things can turn out for the best. Even whenever it's naive and he's wrong. Like, I love that in this movie, if he didn't convince them to go stay at that farmhouse, not only would he be alive, but all those people would be alive. Like, he did make the wrong decision. Like, Logan was right to be paranoid and keep going. But that also doesn't mean it was the wrong decision, because I think that he was still, like, by believing and by, like, choosing to reach out and have the kind of night that they did, and to see, like, how that does kind of bring both Laura and Logan to life a little bit after what they've been through. Like, his instinct is still correct in that that's kind of something that they need. And that's, like, the Xavier, like, special, you know, secret sauce, I guess. Like, I think that you're right.
Wait for it. His superpower.
His superpower is empathy.
That's right.
I do, like, man,
being
I think
lucky
about
is not a superpower. Yes.
I think about Multiverse of Madness and how we talked about that being such a great feature for us on this last rewatch. And I, you know, that line when they say, like, we can't trust him, talking about Strange, and he's like, I believe that we can. It's this, like, I don't know, like, that it does get me, like, I and that is, like, the Captain America fan in me. But I like that, for as bleak as this movie gets, to your point, the thing that separates a movie like this from something like Joker, which came out 2 years later and was also doing a very kind of, it's the superhero movie, but it's really dark and more of a drama.
Right.
Like, that didn't have the kind of soft, like, it wasn't interested in any kind of hope or finding any kind of beauty. Like, that movie was just all about the, you know, depravity of man, basically. And then it's over.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I think that is a key thing here. And then, yeah, Laura, like, man, I just, I really liked the final scene too, not to get ahead of us, but just thematically, like the X on the gravestone, I thought was such a nice,
watching
this as the end of our journey, and instead of this coming out in 2017 and then there being 3 or 4 more X-Men movies.
Right.
Like, That was legitimately moving for me, I thought, because
of
what Xavier did to get them there and what that means about who Logan is and what that means about who Laura sees herself as moving forward.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, for sure. The funeral scene for Charles was also amazing, where Hugh Jackman is just flexing his acting muscles, but then Laura walks up and holds his hand. And I thought that is, man, that got me. Just such a beautiful thing. And then the car won't start. Hugh is freaking out. And there's a couple of really great shots from Laura watching that and watching him process that grief. That's the first thing. Then the second thing is, yes, when Wolverine actually dies, not only just the X, from what it means from a symbolic nature for him as a character, with that being his lasting image, that it's an X-Men instead of this rogue, bitter Logan. But she did a great job. The weeping, the sobbing there over his body.
Yeah.
Like, one of the best child actors we've covered, I think, on this podcast. Yeah. For sure. By the way, and I haven't watched it at all, but she's apparently, I think she's now a little bit grown up, obviously, and in this new Star Wars show.
That girl. Oh, no way.
Yeah.
The Acolyte?
Yeah. I haven't seen it, but.
I haven't either.
Okay, so before we get through more details of this movie, I do want to hear you argue or attempt to rectify the timelines, because I feel like I'm watching this movie and I'm thinking to myself that if you don't think about any of the other X-Men timing things, this is like a magnificent standalone movie. I think it has 93% Rotten Tomatoes, and that's kind of how I feel. Like, if you're not factoring in the other stuff, and not like, I understand from a thematic standpoint how some of the things do work from the first X-Men, some of the themes they're following up on, but the actual nitty gritty of the details feels like it just doesn't totally sync up to me. And so rectify the timelines for me.
So I was looking at this, both just watching the movie through that lens and then was trying to do a little bit of research. As an initial matter, Hugh Jackman and James Mangold they've indicated that they view this as just a separate alternate timeline.
Oh, they have.
Because
they've said that.
I don't know that doesn't mean everything, right? Because I think that they've said that more in the context of the way they were making the movie and how they didn't want to have constraints. Like they said that the whole goal was to not feel like they had to do anything plot wise to account for anything that had happened.
Okay.
And so I think gave themselves.
I agree with that premise. I think that this movie is even better if you can view it through the lens of, there are thematic elements. Like, you know how like in Across the Spider-Verse, there are things that make any Spider-Man a Spider-Man? Like there are,
like things canon that moments.
Yeah, not just canon moments though, but also like characteristics of any Spider-Man.
Right.
I like the idea of, there are themes here that apply to any Charles and any Logan. Like, this is what could happen to any version of those characters. But the movie to me gets even better if you leave it in that realm, in that headspace. I think if you start trying to think about, like, okay, James McAvoy makes a cameo in Deadpool 2 and like all the cast is young and like, can I buy that in this amount of time he's turned into this version of Patrick Stewart, and that he also would kill X-Men on accident and Logan's lost everyone at this point, and like the Days of Future Past thing, you know, we prevented this from happening and now it's even worse than it ever was. Like, I think if you start thinking that way, it hurts the movie's case a little bit.
Yeah. No, I think that's probably true, which I think is why they won. I mean, they were wise to recognize that the X-Men timeline thing is not only messy, but was still shifting and kind of being written when this movie came out.
Right.
So to drop it whenever, you know, this was before even Dark Phoenix or Deadpool 2 came out. So it's like they couldn't have really anticipated what's going to go on, because you never know how anything is going to be left in this universe. So I think that was smart. I do think there's some interesting, like, not just references, but like there are some arcs here that you can trace. I think if we wanted to try to make it, you know, canon within a certain timeline, there are ways to, but I think maybe like it, if we had to give a definitive answer, I think the way I view this is it's essentially the original X-Men timeline if Days of Future Past didn't happen. Now, again, that's still confusing, because then you have to figure out, well, how did Charles, like, how did he come back? Like, you can't go watch the original trilogy and then skip to Logan. And if you watch the first two and then skip to Logan, that's also kind of like, it's hard to get from point A to point B. But I think generally you have to look at it kind of like sort of what people did with No Way Home, where it's like, is this straight up exactly Toby from the Raimi trilogy, or is this like basically the same Toby, except, you know, there's like one or two minor differences.
And I think it's that.
And I think here, I think that that's right.
Here's what I also wonder. I wonder if Deadpool and Wolverine, we're recording this before we've seen the new film. I wonder if that has something to say about it. Like, what if Deadpool finds a different version of Wolverine, a different universe Wolverine, and in the TVA, they see all these other versions, including a clip from Logan where he dies, and Deadpool makes a comment about, oh, that was never really from the X-Men universe anyways, or something.
Yeah.
Don't you think that's possible?
No, I mean,
because I do.
I wouldn't be surprised at all if Deadpool at least makes a reference to the fact that Logan's supposed to be dead.
Yeah.
Because he already made that reference once. So it's like, if you're watching the Deadpool trilogy as a standalone thing, it would almost not make sense for them to not make something of it. But I think it could work, like, if you want this to be a unified thing, because I realized, like, there are the original trilogy references, like specifically Liberty Island.
Yes, and I caught that one.
The cage fighting, like, basically, I think it's almost all limited to the first X-Men film in terms of explicit references. What you could come up with is, okay, the timeline was reset and Days of Future Past, but maybe if we are treating this as canon, maybe the way that works is Logan still is kind of found by Xavier in the same ways. Like, basically the events of the first X-Men movie still kind of play out around the same way they did. So we don't have the deaths of Jean, maybe, or we don't, because Days of Future Past shows that she's still alive, or Charles or Scott. But otherwise, like, Logan joining the team, you know, all of that stuff kind of happens the way that we saw it. And then this is the future instead of Days of Future Past, one thing I don't think I realized is this is not really post-apocalyptic. Like, I remembered this being post-apocalyptic, but this is just like this is just America in 2029. It's only post-apocalyptic for the mutants.
Yeah, what a good call. Yep. In fact, it seems like America, besides that, is flourishing in that there's not a lot of other references to, like, politic issues. Like, you don't see a lot of, like,
right,
like, news reports of unrest. And, like, did you catch that the semis are self-driving and like, seems to be, like, clicking along pretty well? Like,
oh, yeah.
You know that, right? Those trucks that almost run them over are computer-driven trucks.
That was a cool detail. That actually makes sense. I didn't realize that, and I was trying to figure out what was going on in that scene. But,
well, and that's why there's, like, an AI voice that's like, move over, sorry. But it's the, yeah, it's like a pretty good picture of what, like, that future could look like. And yet, to your point, yes, that was what I caught too, is like, it seems like a lot of people are living normal lives. They just have gotten rid of mutants.
However you look at it, you should still view it in the context of the X-Men, at least like the original trilogy, because they are pulling at least thematically from it. But I think, again, if you want to actually see the ties, I kind of like, you know, this Alkali Corporation, which is an obvious reference to Alkali Lake, where Stryker's facility was. And that,
well, he even that says organization, that his father or grandfather worked on Logan, right?
Right, right. So it's like it's a clear, it does connect all these threads. And I also think, like, the idea that the first movie is Logan, like, they're after him initially, but then you realize they're actually after her. And that's kind of what happens again here. There's the debate, like, why are they coming after Logan? And then you realize they are kind of coming after Logan, but even then it's actually to kind of get to Laura. Like, there's this stuff where it's clearly, it's trying to chase all these things and it's making these connections. The thing that I'm curious about is where, like, the X-Men comics come in, because that's obviously not anything we've ever seen in any other movies, where there are physical X-Men comic books, where he's wearing the Wolverine suit and all that. But again, if you look at, like, a unified timeline, I can kind of see a world where, like, the X-Men team that we see in Dark Phoenix, they're kind of celebrities, like, they're superheroes. And it's the most that the X-Men ever feel like the Avengers, in that people are aware of them and cheering them on. So I don't know, like, I kind of came away of two minds, where I think you're probably right, that I think it works best if you don't try to muddy this up by fitting it in somewhere within the chronology. But I also think that it's not so far off that you lose the benefit of character background.
I think I totally agree. In fact, one of my questions was actually going to be, what did you think of the meta commentary of the X-Men comics? I saw the Uncanny X-Men referenced in our comic book club, or somewhere you referenced that. And then I noticed that's the actual comic that they have in the movie. And obviously, from a movie-making perspective, that's a really fun wink, nod, shout-out to these comics creators, which has got to be so cool for them to see these comics in the movie. But I was curious what you think of a world where, like, people are still writing the comics based on truth, that there are X-Men and they are doing missions, but then just exaggerating them and making up their own while there still are real X-Men. Just kind of a funny idea.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I like it because it makes Wolverine into, like, everyone knows who he is, which is not something that we ever, like, I don't think we ever got the sense that people were aware of Wolverine. Like, maybe they were aware of Xavier because he's just known as this expert on the mutant phenomenon. But I think it allows for, like, it allows for kind of a fall for grace, a fall from grace for both of them. But, like, I liked it too in light of Deadpool and Wolverine. Like, this is another example of the trailer that we've gotten, or trailers kind of informing now my viewing of one of these films. Because, you know, it's like, you were an X-Men, you were the X-Men, which feels like a meta thing when Deadpool's saying that then, because we all know, yeah, Wolverine's like the front of the franchise. But I kind of like seeing that's how he was viewed among people in this universe, because I could see, like, you know, in those comics, he's wearing the yellow costume. That's, at that point, the only time we've ever even seen that costume. And so I think now that we're getting a version of him wearing that, like, is this a universe that more, even more closely tracks what's actually written in these comic books? Like, is this one of those, like, that it does kind of happen that way, the way that it's written in some timeline. And that's sort of the timeline that we're pulling the new Logan from. I think it's if nothing else, it's a fun Easter egg. But I think that it also gives some additional color to like how the X-Men were viewed prior to their demise.
Yeah. Okay. I have two final questions and then I can wrap it. But if you were directing this movie, do you think if the scene with the family on the farm had gone a different route where you get all of the dinner stuff, you go to bed, even if X-24 breaks in, stabs Charles, do you think that if there was like a skirmish, but the kid and the husband and wife like shot some shotguns, they ran away and they got into a bunker and hid or got away, and then they watch it all happen through the crack of a bunker, and then as Logan's driving away, they throw the bunker open and they're like, you get one shot of them looking at Logan driving away. Do you think that could have been as effective or not? Because I feel like murdering the whole family is Joker-esque in its excessive darkness for no other reason. Like, what is just like in, what is it? Is it Origins Wolverine? Where the nice old people get murdered at the... at the farm. I'm like, do we have to do that again? What did those people do to deserve it? I think what they're trying to say, what Mangold is trying to say, is these bad guys will stop at nothing, including killing other humans. But I'm not sure it was that necessary. And that's maybe me just as a fanboy going, golly, it sucks for all these random people that keep getting killed being associated with Logan. And I guess that's what they're trying to teach us. But I just wonder if there's an alternate version of that scene where I'm not as pissed off at the movie for doing it.
No, I mean, I think that could be effective in a different way. But I'm thinking, even if Charles had still died, but the family didn't, I think the problem is that wouldn't give Logan the sense that he's bringing disaster wherever he goes. I think that would feel more just like a loss and a sad moment in the movie. But I think that the whole family being killed, even though Logan, like the fact that he's there to help, like they stop in the first place to help with the horses, which, by the way, I also really love that Xavier scene. It's just like a very quiet kind of gentle moment, but like they are stopping to be kind of heroes again, and then the rude awakening of them helping is what gets all of them killed. I do think it's important to justify Logan's anger and to justify his feeling that he can't even, like, it's better for Laura and these other kids to get away from him, because yet again, he's drawing the trouble. So, I mean, you're for sure right.
I just get mad at it. That's all. You're for sure correct.
Yeah.
Which I guess means it's effective.
That's true.
My second question, they reference multiple times in the film that he's rotten inside and something's poisoning him and different versions of that. Am I missing something, or are they just meaning that the adamantium that's been put inside of him is going bad? It has like a shelf life and it's rotting, and that's what's killing him. Is that all it is?
I think so. Which I was glad, because I was feeling crazy. I can't remember which episode. Maybe it was the Wolverine when we were going through that. But I remember saying on the podcast, like, isn't that the issue in Logan? And we couldn't remember what it was that like caused his healing powers to malfunction.
It's not a spider bug on his heart this time.
I think my take is that it's just the fact that he has had the adamantium in him now for so long that it's finally like it's poisoning him.
Decomposing and
or it's just like, it's like a lead poisoning kind of a thing where it's like his body's been fighting it the entire time. But now he's getting older, and he does age like to some degree. it's not that he's immortal. And then I think the fact that he's getting older combined with, you know, it's been now decades and decades that he's had this in him. I think it's just like making its way into his bloodstream permanently or something.
I think that's also right.
One thing that I found myself wishing, because again, it's like the timeline stuff really is fascinating, because did you notice that Mangold makes a point to show the katana, like the sword that he has hanging on the wall of their bunker?
No, that's fascinating though.
So it's like Mangold is trying to connect this to the Wolverine, which makes sense. And then the farmhouse thing, I was thinking, man, this feels like a straight up callback to X-Men Origins, where they're like, because like you said, that seemed intentional to me. And not saying that they were trying to like give that movie more credit than it's due, but it does seem like they were kind of making this the conclusion to that Wolverine trilogy. Whereas I really always thought that first movie was fully in the dustbin. And again, most of it is, but in the same way that I think the Wolverine contained a few little references to events of Origins, and that surprised me, this kind of surprises me too. But what I was going to say is I kind of wish, it's sort of like with Spider-Man 3, where I wish that like one of the fights with Harry and Peter, they were actually in costume instead of like both being them in street clothes, or at least Peter in street clothes. I kind of wish, like, if we're going to get two Mangold movies doing Wolverine, I kind of wish that we had gotten, like, it feels a little bit like he's double dipping by having him like not fully healing two movies in a row. Like, it does feel a little redundant, where I think the answer is you just kind of pull the Wolverine out, because I don't think the Wolverine's really doing much that Logan isn't doing better. I feel like they could have just leaned into like the thing about that movie that's interesting is it's, you know, just Logan kind of in the samurai culture and playing on that comics background, but not needing to do like the Logan without healing powers twice. That's like a small thing, but
for sure.
The second piece of that though, that I had kind of forgotten about until we got close to it at the end of the movie. I really do love that, like, I guess it's the mutant growth hormone, but whatever he injects himself with at the end, and the way they set that up, the way that it's used as a plot device, I think is actually pretty effective, because they let you know basically like if he took it in doses, my sense is that he could potentially recover from what's like going on. He can maybe heal back enough to fight against the poisoning and maybe survive, or he can take the whole thing and go like rage mode, you know, for a couple minutes. Ooh. And so that's an act of sacrifice, which I like. But also I love that we, at the very end, like, we've had this such a great Jackman performance all the way through of him like in pain constantly, and he's like always drinking and coughing. He's out of it. Yeah. And then you get to see like this kind of X2. I mean, he's even in the like the wife beater.
Oh yeah.
And running and just like running through the forest and taking people out. Like, it's a really great swan song moment
for sure
Hugh Jackman's Wolverine, which is why I understand why it was such a big thing for Jackman to kind of come back after the way this movie ends.
I love that you said that, because my only thought left, my closing thought, was going to be on the action and the violence. First of all, one of my first notes was that the violence this time around is a little less jarring, just because we're coming from Deadpool. Like, it, when I remember seeing movie, and you're coming from Days of Future Past in this, it was like shockingly violent and just such a different thing. Now in our rewatch order, we're just kind of used to it at this point. But the second thing I'll say is I found this movie to be a lot more grotesque in its violence than Deadpool even. And I think it's because Deadpool has a, like you said in our last episode, has like a comic-y feeling level of violence. It almost feels like Kill Bill, like excessive, yeah. but it starts becoming like fake feeling.
It's almost like cartoony intentionally.
It's kind of cartoony. And so it doesn't feel as like raw. And so you kind of just start tuning it out. Here, this was more horrifying to me. Like, and it's shockingly amazing. Some of the stuff is incredible they can pull off. Like the slow motion sequence where everyone's frozen by Charles, Logan is putting his claws through their head. First of all, it looks so realistic. Like, I don't even know how they do that realistically. But I found the violence to be way more jarring than Deadpool here. Like, or just more grotesque, more real, more raw. And then, that being said, on the action front, not just the violence, man, there are some cool choreography things specifically from Laura. I mean, yes, it's awesome watch Wolverine at the end, like you're saying, and them fighting back to back and side by side. Like when he says, like, get behind me, and then Logan takes some bullets and then she jumps over him and slashes dudes. Like,
dude,
they slash what people a moment. In all different ways. It's pretty cool. And I love, like, the main doctor, who I think is Richard Grant, by the way, shout out Loki. He does a good job too, like pure evil.
In this timeline, Loki is impersonating a Stryker type.
But even that, like as he's going on his rant, very Deadpool-esque, Logan just shoots him in the head and it's super graphic, but it's kind of fulfilling. Yeah. It's like Mad Max when Joe gets his face ripped off. You're kind of like, that's horrifying, but yes, like, thank you. More of that. By the way, I felt the same way in Deadpool 2 at the very end when the schoolmaster gets run over by the car, like such a, thankful that someone did it.
I heard you coming for like 30 seconds. I was trying so
I
know, hard
I
to
never
laugh.
Brought that up, and that made me laugh so hard. Like, I'm trying to keep a straight face. That made me laugh so hard. Thank you. I wanted to follow up on that. I guess what I'm saying is the violence is jarring here. It's probably not as jarring as if you had never seen Deadpool. That being said, some of the action sequences were really well thought out. And Laura, again, or whoever her stunt double is, killed it.
Yeah. I agree. I thought this is the most Wolverine, like, I remember when they announced this was an R-rated movie that, you know, that was kind of a bold thing. And the question was how much they would take advantage of that. And we've talked about this like in the X-Men 97 context. The thing about Wolverine as a hero is you can't, like, he's so cool. The claws are so cool. But to see him really use those claws is inherently going to be very violent in a way that kind of pushes the boundaries of PG-13.
Oh, for sure.
So you have to get really creative with, like, oh, he's going to use them to, you know, cut through a locked door.
Right.
Or he stabs somebody, but you don't. Right. Yeah. It's like you see the claws go in, but you don't really see them come out. Or,
yep.
But it's like, or he's, you know, he's impaling, but not slicing. And so.
Or like you see that he's face to face with someone and jamming the claws through their chest, but it's just below camera.
Right, right. Seeing that fully here
is jarring.
Like,
no doubt.
It is, but it's cool. Like it's like it makes me excited to see that mixed with the Deadpool brand that you were talking about earlier, because I do think we'll get some really cool, like some cool R-rated fight scenes like that. It did crack me up too with this being an R-rated movie. I think the first word in this movie is from Hugh Jackman, which like made me laugh out loud because it's like them telegraphing like, hey, this is R now. Yeah, just in case you didn't know.
Yeah, right. No doubt. There's probably like 10 of them in the first sequence or 20 in the first sequence with the people breaking this into his car. And then he's going to quick gore them all, cut off some arms.
Yeah. I by the way, my last comment, I think I'm sure there are things that I'll forget about and we can come back because I really did have a blast watching this. I was also struck by how great the peripheral performances were for the most part. A couple, again, I'm going to hate a couple of the kid actors were a little like, nah, for me.
Yeah.
But.
And this is a hot take.
Otherwise.
I didn't think the family in the farmhouse was unbelievable. I thought they were fine.
That's fair. That's fair.
Okay. We haven't talked at all about
the. But the villains.
Yes, the villain is pretty compelling. Both the doctor, but also the military general. As far as like playing the like terrifying straight-laced military general, which we've had like 10 trillion times, I thought this guy did a good job.
Like the blonde guy?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought he was a standout. Like that first scene when he gets the limo. And that's a
very generic role, you know?
Yeah. But the way he does like the, when he's talking about how people found these limbs at the scene. And I forget the two names that he's like, they thought it was, you know, either this or this. And that can't be on account of one being dead and one being fictional. Like the whole delivery there, he's just immediately kind of oozing this charm that I think like the best villains have.
For sure. I'll also just give one last shout out to, I'm blanking on the name for some reason. It's killing me. It's 8:30 in the morning. I'm blanking on the name, but the albino tracker guy.
Oh, Caliban.
Caliban. Thank you. He does a good job too, I thought.
Yeah. Which I realized at the time, again, we don't have to get into all the timeline stuff, but that character appears in Apocalypse.
I know. So like, yeah. Anyways, that doesn't make sense.
And I always thought that they were totally like mutually exclusive imaginings of that character. But I actually don't know that that's the case, because you get that line at the end where he talks about how like basically he used to work to sniff other mutants out.
Right.
Which I feel like the sense we got from Caliban in Apocalypse is that he was like a bad guy to a sense or to a degree. So this could technically just be an older version of Caliban, I guess.
I have to think about that for a split second, though, because just the nature of him being in Apocalypse, doesn't that run antithetical to the original? Like, your whole premise was, this feels like a continuation of the original X-1 and 2 timelines if Days of Future Past had never happened. But then would you get Caliban? Because Apocalypse wouldn't have happened that way, right? Apocalypse is only happening because Days of Future Past did happen and they restarted.
Right. But I think my theory would be that, like, we've never seen, you know, the way that they tell this story, the only version of the X-Men in the 2000s that we've seen is the original trilogy. So we don't know. All we know is that he wakes up in Days of Future Past, and it seems like Logan's living in a world very similar to, you know, where things stood after the first X-Men movie. Like, everyone's alive in there and Hank's
there.
And
what year is that?
I think it's supposed to be 25?
Okay, so why does Deadpool have a cameo of the young X-Men in 2017?
I mean, that's... Yeah, I feel like it shouldn't be that. Because, I mean, one...
Right?
They even acknowledge in this movie... No, you're not. I mean, that's the thing. Like, whenever he says... You know, you're the world's most famous octogenarian, and he says nonagenarian, actually. Like, I appreciate them letting us know, like, yes, Charles Xavier now, if it's 2029, would be coming up on 100. So in the 2000s, he would have been in his, like, 70s and 80s and not James McAvoy as, like, a 40-year-old man or whatever they show in Deadpool. But I think you just kind of have to ignore.
Okay, and when does Dark Phoenix take place? McAvoy? Technically, the movie itself.
The 90s.
Oh, gosh. So, okay, yeah. So McAvoy looks like that in 1995, but then he looks like Patrick Stewart in 2005.
Right.
Okay.
In 2000, really. Again, it's that Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Cool, man. Great. Sounds good. Okay, anyways.
Yeah, it's...
So he goes from James McAvoy to 100 years old and death in 30 years. Tough.
Yeah.
Tough.
Yeah, it's you know, sometimes it's just... You know those people where it's like they don't age a day and then all of a sudden it all catches up with them?
Plus, he's gone through a lot, so... It's like a president, you know? You age 10 years when you're there for 4 years.
But I do, I wanted to leave it on for me. And then if you had any final thoughts, but to the extent this is the end of the journey, whether you look at it as in timeline or not, not just for Logan, but for the X-Men as a whole, I do find it really moving. And I think it works really well for a lot of the reasons we talked about with Charles, but even just plot wise, like it weirdly makes sense to me that this is how it all ends. Like, because we've seen over and over again that Magneto is normally right, that his sense that people are going to always distrust mutants and that you can never expect any peace to last, like, that is correct. Like, ultimately, these seeds that we saw sown in the very first X-Men movie of people being afraid of mutants and trying to destroy mutants, like, those all come to fruition with them realizing how to actually prevent the creation of mutants for a while. And then the fact that Charles still, even in that, is holding on and manages to save the last vestige of mutantdom. Like, that, if you tell me that's how all this ends, I think prior to this watch, I would have thought, like, oh, man, what a, like, bummer ending. But I think it kind of is more... it's more meaningful to me than if you were to tell me there's just this open-ended, like, the X-Men continue to thrive and, like, everything's great. And then Charles, you know, hands it over to Cyclops and Storm. And, like, this feels like a very, it understands the conceit of the franchise, of the property. And I think that it actually does it the service of a proper ending, which is what we always said that we appreciated about Endgame. Like, it actually gives us a final chapter of these stories for some of the characters. And so despite the fact that we've had more Patrick Stewart appearances in other universes, that we're going to have another Hugh Jackman appearance in other universes, and even that we had movies come out after this release order wise, I think that this is a really perfect way to close off, you know, the two decades of X-Men stories we got from the Fox team.
Yeah, I do too. I started off the episode by saying I would really struggle to rank this, but we're closing our journey. This is it. We're done. And so I got to rank it. I don't know what to do. I think I'm going to put it number two or three, even though it's number one. It is number one. It should be number one. But I'm going to go Days of Future Past, Logan, X2, I think. Deadpool 2. That'd be my top four. But it probably should be number one.
Yeah.
But yeah, I understand what you're saying. It is a fitting ending in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that's the same. I've got the same rankings, by the way. I think I would put this over Days of Future Past, even preference wise. I think X2 would be the one where it's still, to me, it's got, like, most of the ingredients. The only missing piece there is Fassbender, which Days of Future Past does right. So well. But yeah, I think I would have the same top four as you. I think it just depends on...
It feels like those four have separated themselves, right? Like, in any... I would accept any order of Logan, Days of Future Past, X2, and Deadpool 2.
Yeah, I think that's right. And they're all kind of doing separate things at...
Right.
Peak levels.
Like, Logan's not trying to be Endgame like Days of Future Past is. But with that comes some, you know, some Jennifer Lawrence stuff I don't love. And, you know, there's some stuff that's kind of clunky here or there. But I prefer the team ups and, like, the time travel stuff is fun and the mind bendy stuff and the old cast and the new cast, you know. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Those four, I think, would be the top four. I do think that there is a pretty clear, not drastic, but clear cutoff after those four. Between, like, X1, First Class, Deadpool 1, Dark Phoenix. Like, those are all good movies, but these are great movies, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. I think my second tier would probably be just X-Men and Deadpool 1, having finished it. Like, the first X-Men.
And then another and then I break. Think, yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
But I still think those are good movies, for the most part.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that, man, I don't know if after... Like, Apocalypse was 2016, I think. I think beginning in 20, you know, with the release of Deadpool, I can't remember if that came out before or after Apocalypse. I guess before.
They made some pretty good movies, basically.
Yeah, like the exact period that I always thought the X-Men movies were really going off the rails is weirdly right.
When they got
the
good.
Most consistent.
Yep. Yeah.
So there we go.
All right, guys. Wow, what a freaking journey we've been on. If you are listening to this episode and you are a Friends from Work Plus subscriber and you've been on this journey with us the whole way, congratulations. It's been epic and we'd love to hear from you. Jump on Discord. Let us know your thoughts on this movie and how it fits with everything else we've watched. If you are finding this episode years later or a year later or a month later, as we are recording this, we still have not seen Deadpool and Wolverine. And so that is what's next. And there might be some answers or some fulfillment to some of the stuff we just watched in this whole journey.
Yeah.
In a week. But most likely, you're probably listening to this a month after Deadpool and Wolverine, and so you know this already. And so I don't know how this is going to age. But it's been a journey. We're thankful to have you along for the ride. And a lot of fun stuff coming up. Thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing. We'll see you next time. Back here on Friends from Work.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90 exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.